The following is a Mad Owl presentation.
And now, Galactic Blue presents the closing tag. Here is your host, Raoul Smith.
Welcome, everyone near and far. From Salt Lake to Ogden, Rio to Puerto Rico, welcome to another edition of the Closing Tag. I'm Raoul Smith. I'm the president, CEO, co-founder, and lead developer for Galactic Blue. And no, I'm not related to Will Smith. Nor have I been slapped for making a joke about Jada Pinkett Smith's condition. Please don't hurt me, Big Will. As you already know, we are on most of the major platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. And each and every video episode can be found on our dedicated Facebook page, on our YouTube channel, and on the closingtag.com. We had a bit of a hiccup with the site a little while back, but the archives appear to be working again. So while you're there, while you're on the Facebook page or on the YouTube channel, come say hi, leave a comment, leave a like, maybe hit the bell for notifications. I greatly appreciate it. It's not as stacked an episode this time as the last few episodes have been, but there is a ton of news to get to, including some personal news that may or may not affect the podcast, but I'll save that for the end. But first, as usual, let's start with some tech news.
Here is some tech news.
Unknown Worlds, the creator of the popular alien waterworld exploration survival game, Subnautica, has announced they are working on a sequel to Subnautica and are actively looking for a senior narrative designer to join their team, among other developer and engineer-based positions. Unknown Worlds was acquired last year by Krafton, the studio best known for PUBG. So considering this is still very much in the early stages, I would not expect even a demo of this new game until 2024 at the very earliest. TypeScript has announced that they are releasing the beta of the newest version of their programming language, TypeScript 4.7. TypeScript, for those that aren't in the know, is the engine behind Node.js, one of the most popular JavaScript libraries around. Node is usually used to download Node packages that are often used to create React, Vue.js, and other JavaScript libraries, and is also used by some backend developers to create JavaScript backend platforms. This is the first update to the library in quite some time and promises to help bridge the gap between Node and ECMAScript, an earlier JavaScript library that was originally used to create React. More news on this developing story as it comes. Speaking of React, React 18 is now available. The update to the wildly popular JavaScript library promises to usher in a new era to React development. Rendering, no pun intended, React DOM render completely obsolete, focusing more on hooks and promising improved API support. React 18 is also promising automatic batching, which helps to handle multiple functions with a single event, something I personally am looking forward to playing with myself. React is also introducing transitions, something very similar to set timeout. If you're at all familiar with JavaScript programming, transitions help to execute code in real time, but also hold it off if you need to. Similarly, to set timeout, without having to write a set timeout function. There are a ton more features and toys built within React 18, like server-side suspensions that I will likely hold off on doing a deep dive on until the Patreon is up and running. More on that at the end of the episode. But needless to say, React is once again looking to shake things up in the development world. Now, there are a number of reasons why startups don't succeed or wind up failing within a very short amount of time. Even before the pandemic, you could go ahead with lack of leadership, poor management, a lack of vision, possibly even just not enough effective marketing. In a video circulating online, Better.com CEO Vishal Garg and CFO Kevin Ryan addressed the layoff of over 900 employees back in December, and that's just 9% of their staff. Though for the other 91%, I'd imagine after hearing what Garg and Ryan admitted, their confidence in current management and leadership is slightly shaken. Garg admitted in the video that the company in general, and himself in particular, had made a number of mistakes, which is good. It's good that he's admitting that. And I say that because I'm always on this podcast preaching accountability. Own up to your mistakes and vow to correct them. About 2 minutes into the meeting, Garg said, quote, "Make no mistake, we did also eliminate redundant roles who might be strong performers, but were in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong task and weren't mission critical," end quote. 4 minutes later, Garg acknowledged that the company was continuing to hire, including interns, in the midst of the layoffs, while also sending a very clear and direct message to the rest of the team. Quote, "It's because we expect those people to be super productive and add value, and if they don't, we will exit them too," end quote. If they don't, we will exit them too, quote unquote. Let's stop for a minute and acknowledge how brazen and ballsy that thinly veiled threat is. I mean, who wouldn't want to work for a CEO that flat out says, "Do your job to expectation or you're fired"? I mean, come on, sign me up. I'm right here, coach. Anyway, Garg added, quote, "We are going to be leaner, meaner, and hungrier going forward. We will not be spending time trying to raise capital. We will not be spending time focused on what investors think. We will be spending time grinding this business forward in what will likely be a bloodbath in the mortgage industry in the next year or two," end quote. So, to recap, not only is the CEO basically saying, "We have high expectations, and if you don't meet those expectations, immediately you're getting shit canned," but he's also saying, "We're not raising the money to pay competitive wages." I mean, who taught this guy the finer arts of building a business? Jeff Bezos? At the 8 minute mark, Garg admitted to not being better at managing the company's money, admitting that the hiring process wasn't as buttoned up as it needed to be, and having to explain a layoff of over 3,000 employees in just 3 months' time. This all but confirms insider sources claiming that the company was losing over $50 million a month. I mean, there's bleeding money And then there's gushing money. He continues, quote, "Today we acknowledge that we overhired and hired the wrong people, and in doing that, we failed. I failed. I was not disciplined over the past 18 months. We made $250 million last year, and you know what? We probably pissed away $200 million. We probably could have made more money last year and been leaner, meaner, and hungrier." There's that phrase again. "We should have done what we did today 3 months ago. That's what I'm saying to you right now. It's what I've said to the board before. You will not be allowed to fail twice. You'll be encouraged to fail once, but not allowed to fail twice." End quote. Listen, I actually and legitimately acknowledge and commend Garg and the management team admitting that they've made mistakes and they're looking to correct them. But they have to know, especially in a very driven and very competitive market like mortgage management, if you're not willing to spend money, you're going to get left in the dust. The real estate market right now is flooded, especially here in Utah, with startups and established companies looking to get a leg up on the competition. And the only way to do that in any field is to hire the best candidates around. You're simply not going to do that by saying, "We're not raising more capital. We're not going to listen to what investors think is best. Or we have an expectation, and if you don't meet it, you're fired." This isn't Glengarry Glen Ross. This isn't something you can go into without a firm understanding of the situation. Going into something like this half-assed is going to get you into a lot of financial trouble, as Vishal Garg and leadership at Better.com are finding out the hard way. As a wise man once told me, you can't be afraid of failure when running a startup or a small business. And that's basically what he's saying, is he doesn't want people to fail. Startups are going to fail. Some go on to have wild success, but most don't even get off the ground because they're run by people who don't understand how to manage the business. Unfortunately, this story is sounding more and more like it's not going to have a happy ending. Put the coffee down, Vishal. Coffee is for closers only. Elon Musk, the eccentric, egocentric billionaire owner of Tesla and SpaceX, has announced that he will not, in fact, be joining Twitter's board after all. Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal, and I hope I'm not butchering that name too badly, tweeted, quote, "We announced on Tuesday that Elon would be appointed to the board contingent on a background check and formal acceptance. Elon's appointment to the board was to become officially effective April 9th. But Elon shared that same morning that he will not be joining the board. I believe this is for the best. We have and will always value input from our shareholders, whether they are on our board or not. Elon is our biggest shareholder, and we will remain open to his input." End quote. Ever since it became public knowledge that Musk had ownership stake in the social media giant, he's been hard at work hyping Tesla and SpaceX, though it's fair to point some of that might just be trolling or getting people talking. You know what the saying is, right? No press is bad press. Wow, I almost butchered that one. Since we're on the topic of Elon Musk, Musk announced the other day that SpaceX successfully launched its all-first private crew en route to the International Space Station as part of the plans for the upcoming Axiom space program. Hopefully that rocket isn't shaped like a private this time. Meta has announced that they are following with the Oversight Board's recommendation to remove an exception that permitted users can share a person's residential address as long as it's publicly available. Meta's response comes after about a year after the company asked the Oversight Board to weigh in on its handling of private residential information. The board responded in February, calling on Mark Zuckerberg and Meta to tighten its policies surrounding the sharing of private home addresses over concerns about doxing. Listen, I've said for years that having your address and phone number on Facebook for just anybody to access is a terrible idea. I don't know how many people know this, but there are some really crazy and borderline psychotic people on social media. Not everybody is what they seem on there. I know, that's shocking, right? Anyway, about as shocking as finding out Jeff Bezos is anti-union. According to Meta, they will be removing the exception by the end of the year. As the board notes in this recommendation, removing the exception for publicly available private residential information may limit the availability of this information on Facebook and Instagram when it is still publicly available elsewhere. However, we recognize that implementing this recommendation can strengthen privacy protections on our platforms, quote unquote. It's nice to see that Zuckerberg and company are at least trying to correct a lot of the mistakes they've made over the years, except for the one that matters the most, data mining. But hey, baby steps, am I right? Warner Media and Discovery have successfully completed one of the largest multimedia mergers in the United States since, well, AOL Time Warner. Kids, Google America Online, Time Warner merger. Warner Media, the parent company for HBO Max, and Discovery, parent of Discovery Plus, completed their merger, allowing the two companies to build what they have said will be the most differentiated content portfolio in the world, quote unquote. Discovery president and CEO David Zaslav is set to helm the new company, a massive responsibility during a time of significant change for Warner Media, right as HBO Max is coming off a very successful 2021, in which it saw growth for the streaming service that far exceeded internal expectations. I touched on that story in a previous episode of the podcast. HBO Max is set to absorb Discovery Plus and all of its content very similarly to the agreement Warner Media has with anime mega streaming platform Crunchyroll. Combining the two streaming services with content like Dune, The Matrix, Euphoria, Watchmen, Peacemaker, and classic HBO shows like Sex and the City and The Sopranos, as well as 90 Day Fiancé, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Man vs. Food, Hell's Kitchen, The Ghost Hunters, among others, is designed to solidify HBO as a legitimate contender for the likes of Peacock, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime Video, and Netflix. And dare I say, they're succeeding. And it just wouldn't be a tech news segment on the closing tag if we didn't talk about the scumbags of the gaming industry, Activision Blizzard. First, there's the fact that they're now fighting even more and very recent sexual harassment claims from former employees, with alleged incidents happening as recently as late March. And reportedly even more turmoil in the board over the recent acquisition proposal by Microsoft. Then there's this. Hours after announcing it would convert over 1,000 temporary and contract QA employees to full-time status with a starting pay of $20 an hour, Activision Blizzard is stating that Raven Software QA workers will not be part of that deal. Now, if you remember, Raven Software was the contractor company hired by Activision Blizzard, which saw its entire QA team gutted after the release of the latest Call of Duty game. Well, recently, Raven Software organized a QA tester union called the Game Workers Alliance. According to a report from Bloomberg, members of this union will not be able to take advantage of the new pay minimum. Activision Blizzard spokesperson Jessica Taylor, who, if I were a betting man, I'd take the under on the over-under of how long before she quits the company being set at 6 months, confirmed these findings. Quote, all QA at Raven are full-time and already have access to full company benefits and eligibility to participate in the company's bonus program. Due to our legal obligations under the National Labor Relations Act, we cannot institute a new pay initiatives at Raven at this time because they would be new kinds of compensation change, end quote. The Communication Workers of America, an organization that helps form and has advocated for unions at numerous tech companies, including Activision Blizzard, had this to say in an email from Secretary Treasurer Sarah Steffens, quote, make no mistake, all credit for Activision Blizzard's latest move to give all temporary and contingent QA team members full-time employment and a raise should go to the workers who have been organizing, mobilizing, and speaking out. It's especially galling, then, that Activision has excluded Raven Software QA workers who have been at the forefront of this effort from these benefits. The company's assertion that the National Labor Relations Act prevents them from including Raven workers is clearly an effort to divide workers and undermine their effort to form a union. Activision's disingenuous announcement is further evidence of the need for workers to have a protected voice on the job. We strongly urge Activision Blizzard to rectify this situation and respect Raven QA workers' protected right to organize under the law. Quote unquote. Yeah, it's especially galling, yes. I mean, these people act as if they're surprised. Have I not been saying on this podcast for a while now that Activision Blizzard clearly does not give a shit about any of its employees? And now with a deal from Microsoft that appears imminent, that includes multi-million dollar golden parachutes, get out of jail free cards, and executive bonuses ranging in the eight figures, essentially waiting for FCC approval, they seem to be giving even less of a shit. Because, let's face it, where is the incentive? The only reason They're even doing this kind of gesture of good to is because they need to appear to be doing something to help sweeten the FCC honeypot. It's the bare minimum, which judging from what they've been doing for the last 12 years, seems par for the course for Activision Blizzard. So before I get to the two big tech news stories of the pod, you know I gotta plug this movie. Again, you know I have to. The Telltale Heart is an award-winning film adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's short story, which takes a headfirst deep dive into the Sea of Madness, retelling a classic psychological thriller with a mind-bending, pulse-pounding, bloody, disgusting film. Starring award-winning actor Sonny Grimsley and directed by the brilliant McLean Lindquist, The Telltale Heart has won awards and made appearances in many short film and independent film festivals, ranging from the FilmQuest Film Festival in Provo, Utah, to being awarded Best Short Film at the Minefield Film Festival in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to most recently being awarded Best Overall Short, Best Horror Short, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Sound Design, and Best Special Makeup from the IndieX Film Festival, to appearing in over 60 international film festivals throughout the world. Revisit Edgar Allan Poe's short story, as this film brings more than just a classic horror story to a new audience, but also discovers a creative way to explore the groundbreaking psychological thriller. The narrative is enhanced through an unprecedented use of sounds and light, and the characters blend a modern sensibility with anachronistic charm as seen through an unsettling array of time and space, while a shifting setting disorients the unwitting audience. What is seen and what is heard leads the perplexed audience to ask, what is insanity and what truly constitutes reality? TelltaleMovie.com for more information on this brilliantly insane thriller. So the biggest tech news of this podcast deserved its own little segment. And of course, I am talking about the newly redesigned all-electric 2023 DeLorean for the time traveler in your life to transport themselves back to 1955 in style. I kid. Amazon was dealt a major blow in its fight against union organizing recently, as workers in a New York warehouse voted in favor of organizing a union. The request has been filed already with the National Labor Relations Board and is pending approval. But this hasn't stopped the bigwigs at Amazon from doing their damnedest to deal a crushing blow to the idea of workers organizing for labor rights. In their latest attempt, Amazon claims that it has evidence that shows the union, quote, threatened employees to coerce them into voting yes, electioneered and interfered with employees waiting in line to vote, and threatened immigrants with the loss of benefits if they did not vote, end quote. Amazon was to have officially submitted its objections to the NLRB by last Friday, April 8th, though they do have until April 22nd to file the proof that they claim to be gathering. This is, or at least should not be, any shock or surprise. Amazon is, by design, and has always been, staunchly anti-union and anti-workers' rights. Remember, the only reason they have employees starting at $15 an hour in the first place is because they were called out for their anti-workers' rights ways by several members of Congress years ago, including and most notably Senator Bernie Sanders. Wow, butchered that one. Meanwhile, the National Labor Relations Board has already sued Amazon for allegedly firing employees in retaliation for union activity and issued a complaint saying Amazon was, quote, threatening, surveilling, and interrogating workers, end quote, in the run-up to the election. It also wants to stop Amazon from forcing employees to attend captive audience meetings, been to a few of those, where it presents anti-union talking points to workers required to attend. Ah, yes, the good old days of mandatory worker meetings in the middle of the stove floor. Joy. In a direct response to the allegations that they were threatening employees into voting, the Amazon Labor Union spoke to Reuters about the allegations, quote, "To say that the Amazon Labor Union was threatening employees is really absurd," end quote. Meanwhile, in Bessemer, Alabama, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union has filed objections against Amazon to the National Labor Relations Board, claiming that the company had, quote, threatened an employee with plant closure if the union was voted in, end quote, barring employees from posting pro-union literature, and engaged in surveillance and or created the impression of surveillance of employees engaged in protected concerted activities, among other things, quote unquote. While the employees ultimately voted against unionizing, the RWDSU claims that scare tactics were designed to go in Amazon's favor and were what ultimately led to the union being voted against. Amazon, keep in mind, had fired Gerald Bryson for organizing the Amazon labor union in the first place. So, picture this for a minute. You're a former Amazon employee turned podcast host. You want to say something. Really want to say something. In times like these, I'm often reminded of a thing my mom would always tell me. Speak softly and take care with what you say, for words also have consequences. But then, on the flip side, I say and think to myself, fuck it. Amazon's never hiring me again anyway. As a full disclosure, I am a former Amazon employee, having worked for 10 months in one of their warehouses, first as a store and then as a member of the ICQA team. Every horror story, every knock, every criticism of how Amazon treats their employees is 100% true. Most employees in the warehouse work what's called the 36-hour week shift, which is 12-hour shifts during graveyard. Also, for every new group of employees that Amazon hires, only half make it through the first day. During these 12-hour shifts, you are allowed two breaks: a 30-minute non-paid lunch break and a 15-minute break. You are not allowed to sit, eat, drink anything other than water in approved containers at your station. You are not allowed to take excessive bathroom breaks. You got an overactive bladder? That's your fault. Bowel issues? Eat smarter. Diarrhea? Sucks to be you. You get written up if you are away from your station for more than 15 minutes outside of your breaks for the entire 12-hour shift. You are judged based on your production comparable to the rest of the crew. If the crew is having a great day and you're dealing with issues with your back or your knees, you get written up. Oh, and by the way, you get 3 write-ups, you're fired. With 2 bad knees and a bad ankle, it's a miracle I survived as long as I did. You're not allowed any music on the floor. They originally allowed team leads to the ability to play music until they claimed the privilege was abused and then put a stop to it entirely. If you had headphones on at all on the floor, even if you just forgot to take them off, that's a write-up. You must wear Amazon-approved work equipment. Well, okay, on that one, I agree with them. Safety should come first. I mean, I could go on for easily another 20 minutes. I could practically do an entire podcast episode solely dedicated to Amazon worker horror stories, fact or fiction. And maybe one day I will. Just today is not that day. For the employees struggling to form a union, be it at Amazon or Activision Blizzard or really anywhere, hang in there, keep fighting the good fight, and know that you are not alone. So since I plugged these guys last time on this podcast, I was asked to talk more about Oliver and Marsden LLC. They're a local renovation and home remodeling company here in the Salt Lake City area. No job is too big or too small for Oliver and Marsden. I know the owner personally and would vouch for these guys really anytime. They've done some amazing work, which you can see for yourself by going to their Facebook page. That's Oliver and Marsden LLC. That's Oliver and Marsden, M-A-R-S-D-E-N, LLC. Ask for Tim, tell him Raul from the Closing Tag sent you, and he'll hook you up proper. Oliver and Marsden LLC. So with the NBA season officially over and the playoffs right around the corner, one team is noticeably absent from the annual tournament to crown a new NBA champion, the Los Angeles Lakers. In an April Fool's joke turned real development, LeBron James tweeted on April 1st that he'd miss the rest of the season. Turns out, that's exactly what happened. LeBron, among several other members of the Lakers roster, including Anthony Davis, has been dealing with a lot of injuries over the last couple years that has kept him out for a significant amount of time. In fact, between the two megastars of the purple and gold, they've missed a grand total of 89 games in the last 2 seasons due to injury, not counting the play-in games or the playoff series versus Phoenix last season. Think about that. 89 games in 2 years. That's more than a season's worth of time missed. Now, for all the LeBron fans and the LeBron stans that are going to be listening to this, and you're probably going to be triggered by what I have to say, fair warning. But let me preface all of that by saying this. I take nothing away from LeBron James. Freakishly athletic. One of the most dynamic scorers in NBA history. There's a reason why he's the second all-time leader in scoring and threatening to knock on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's door. And while I respectfully disagree with anybody that claims that LeBron is the GOAT, I am not going to waste my breath too much trying to defend my position. But we have to start to acknowledge that maybe, just maybe, the Los Angeles Lakers, from Jeannie Buss to Rob Pelinka to Magic Johnson to everybody in that Lakers front office, may have made a deal with the devil and are now paying the price. Think about it for a second. Before LeBron showed up in Tinseltown, the Lakers had a good young team that was developing, you know, kind of getting their bearings and footing about them, maybe becoming something that could potentially be formed into the next Lakers dynasty. Mm-hmm. And granted, they had not made the playoffs in 2 or 3 years before LeBron showed up. Since LeBron arrived in Hollywood, the Lakers have traded that entire core of young talent for aging veterans and injury-prone stars. They brought in a very good coach in Frank Vogel and then left him twisting in the wind for over a year, wondering if he was going to be next on the chopping block. Turns out, as of this week, Vogel is now unemployed. Expectations, underperforming, and general lack of direction were said to be the organization's reasonings behind dismissing Vogel, but let's be honest, the real reason why Vogel is now gone, and trust me, I'm not going to shed any tears over that man. He'll land on his feet somewhere, probably in Sacramento. He's too good not to. But the reason he's gone is because he did not get along with the king. Now, in fairness, the Lakers did win a championship in 2020 as a result of this. But again, I ask, at what cost? Trading Kyle Kuzma and a group of young players that have a lot of upside and a lot of promise for older, slower, more stubborn Russell Westbrook? Yeah, by the way, how did that work out? Now the Lakers have a roster going into the offseason that more resembles an AARP pickup group than an actual NBA title contender. I know Lakers fans too well. I see them and hear them every day on Twitter, on radio, and on TV. The media is far too fascinated with the Lakers to leave them alone even when they're not playing. Lakers fans are not taking this latest development well. Gone is Kyle Kuzma, one of the most electrifying young players in the league, and is replaced with a slow and old Russell Westbrook who snaps at reporters when asked about his assist turnover ratio. Well, okay, more accurately, his turnover to assist ratio. A man who used to average a triple-double in his sleep can't seem to muster more than 5 assists a game now. Gone is Alex Caruso, by all accounts a fan favorite in SoCal, who is now killing it for the playoff-bound Chicago Bulls. Oh, by the way, who called that shot? Replacing him has been a man who was at one time a scoring machine for the Denver Nuggets and the Knicks, a man who was once heralded as the greatest player of his generation to never win an NBA championship. That man is Carmelo Anthony. He at one time was averaging well over 30 points a game, and this season only averaged 13. His shot seems to fail him more often than not, and he isn't good for much else. Gone is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, a good young outside shooter who helped the Washington Wizards get within striking distance of the play-in before star player Bradley Beal got hurt. Replacing him is 36-year-old Trevor Ariza, who at one time was a defensive stalwart for title contenders in the mid-2010s, but now watches as opponents blow right by him. Gone is Montrezl Harrell, a solid young backup center who was instrumental in Charlotte's push towards the play-in. Replacing him is Dwight Howard. 36-year-old Dwight Howard, a man who averaged less than 6 rebounds and slightly more than 6 points a game. A former number 1 overall pick who looked more like he was a former number 51 overall pick. I know what Lakers fans are about to say next. Save it. Save your, well, we have 17 more rings than the Jazz take. Yes, you do. True. But again, at what cost? LeBron James, say what you want about his ability and about his athleticism and his God-given talent, as well as his work ethic. Nobody can take any of that away from the man. But there's a pattern forming here with LeBron. Every team he goes to, with the exception of Miami, it gets shaken up by trading all the young talents and all the draft picks for older, more established stars that are likely well past their prime, and granted, it gets them a championship or two, and then it falls completely apart the minute he leaves town. Again, Miami being the exception to the rule. Remember, the Cavaliers, back during his pre-Miami days, traded for Shaquille O'Neal, a man who had more resembled the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man than the dominating force that revolutionized the center position in the early 2000s. During his second Cleveland run, the team traded for Kevin Love and acquired both J.R. Smith and Dwayne Wade, both well past their primes by that point. The Kevin Love decision is one that is still haunting the Cavaliers to this day, even as they have made the play-in this season. And now we're seeing the same thing happening in LA. Another pattern we're seeing with LeBron-led teams is the coaching position. When he was playing his first stint in Cleveland, Mike Brown had taken over for the coaching ranks. He was actually doing really good. And then once LeBron took his talents to South Beach, Cleveland had dismissed Brown. Yeah, during his second stint in Cleveland, LeBron was responsible for David Blatt, by all accounts, a respectable coach at the time with a good win-loss record. He was responsible for him getting fired in favor of Ty Lue, the same Ty Lue who is now coaching an LA team in the play-in this season, but not the Lakers, rather the Clippers. That same year, when LeBron went Hollywood, Lou was not far behind. But again, instead of going to the Lakers, he went to the Clippers, a team that he has helped coach to prominence in the West. And now the Lakers, a team who will see their third head coach in the LeBron era. Now granted, Luke Walton deserved to get fired, because Luke Walton, in my opinion, is not an NBA head coach. But Frank Vogel? I don't see why he needed to be fired. Now, who will the third coach be? Will it be Mike Krzyzewski, who just recently finished up with Duke? Will it be Quinn Snyder? Will it be a relative unknown? Whoever that poor soul may be, may heaven help them. They will be walking into a situation in which the two star players who have missed more games than played in the last two seasons, and the third wheel still thinks it's 2016. They will have a roster depleted of young talent, unless you count Talon Horton Tucker. They will not have a single first round draft pick until the year 2026. And by then, LeBron will almost assuredly be long gone, as will the new coach. Remember, LeBron has openly said, whichever team drafts his son Bronny will also be getting him. LeBron's only three remaining goals in his career are as follows, and none of them have anything to do with championships. They are to surpass Kareem in the scoring record, another futile attempt to get the non-believers to believe he really is that much better than Jordan, to build his Hollywood stock. Yeah, because Space Jam 2 was such a rousing success. And to play with his son Bronny, becoming the first ever father-son duo to play in the NBA. Here's my question, going to Bronny for a second. Are we even sure he's that good? I get the feeling that, you know, Bronny, unless something develops over the next couple of years, I get the sense that he's going to be more mid to late first round, maybe even second round talent, as opposed to a lottery pick. Would whoever is drafting LeBron or Fruitian Slip, would whoever is drafting Bronny even be getting that good of a deal? Let's think about that for a second. LeBron James, a man who showers praise on his coaches and teammates when things go good, and a man who blames coaches and teammates when they don't, is a curse for any NBA player that gets him at this point. He's 37 years old. He's significantly slower. He still has his moments. He still has his explosive athleticism to an extent. But he can't play nearly as much as he used to. And will throw anyone and everyone under the bus to protect his GOAT status. The Los Angeles Lakers used to be an organization that would strike fear in the hearts of opponents just by showing up. Now, they and their fan base have become caricatures of themselves. All because of one man. That man is LeBron James. We'll be right back. Just a friendly reminder that we're no longer doing tech tips at the end of the podcast, but we'll soon be doing so on our Patreon. More news on when that will be live in the coming weeks or months. However, I do have one bit of advice for all aspiring web developers out there. Three very key, important keys to success as a developer. First, you need to understand you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have sites that appear all wonky and they don't load as intended. And that's fine. I've been at this for 13 years, and even now, I still make mistakes. I still fall on my face. It happens. You just gotta pick yourself up and you gotta move along. Second, get familiar with terminal or the command prompt. 90% of development these days is done using terminal, not just a text editor. Now, I'm not going to advocate that you use Vim like a savage, but terminal can help you with pushing to or pulling from Git repositories, creating Laravel, React, or Vue projects without having to type things from scratch or even deploying your projects. So get very comfortable and get very familiar with terminal. Lastly, number three, it's okay to Google things. Sometimes developers have this phobia with Googling. I get that because I've had that before. Like, supposedly there's this stigma that you're a better developer for not Googling, which when really nothing could be further from the truth. There are going to come times when you have to Google something to find a solution. It's better than banging your head on the desk for hours on end. Been there too. Speaking from personal experience on all of this. So, that is your quick dev tip for this episode. And now, back to your previously scheduled end of episode rant. Now, I've been on this podcast talking about professional wrestling over the last little while. And if you recall, I had some concerns a while back about All Elite Wrestling. AEW has been signing a lot of talent over the last several months that either came from WWE or from the independent scene. Guys and gals like CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, both Matt and Jeff Hardy, Ruby Soho, Andrade El Idolo, Malakai Black, Wesley Blake, Brody King, Keith Lee, Jay Lethal, William Regal, Samoa Joe, and the like. And now word on the street is that they're looking to sign the former Cesaro for their Ring of Honor promotion. So you had to know at some point the pendulum was going to swing the other way, in the direction of an established AEW wrestler signing with WWE. The only question was going to be, how is everybody going to react to that? Well, we got a really good taste of that. Just recently at WrestleMania 38, for weeks, Seth Rollins was begging for an opponent at WrestleMania. Finally got his wish when he was told that he would have a match against an opponent of Vince McMahon's choosing. That opponent turned out to be former AEW Executive Vice President and the son of the legendary Dusty Rhodes, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. Now, if you don't know, here's a brief synopsis of what happened to lead to this point. Cody Rhodes was at one time one of the founding wrestlers of All Elite Wrestling. Remember, Cody helped to organize the All In event that would eventually catch the attention of billionaire Tony Khan, who would then go on to help fund AEW and sign established players like Jim Ross and Chris Jericho. If it weren't for Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks organizing that independent show on a bet by wrestling columnist Dave Meltzer, there would likely not be an AEW right now. So, but somewhere along the way, Cody fell out of favor, not just with the Bucks, but with Tony Khan. Khan didn't want to pay what Cody felt was his just due financially, and Cody made the decision to start negotiating in good faith with Vince McMahon and WWE. Who would inevitably make Cody a very lucrative offer to go back to WWE, where he was once a not very popular or prominent member of the roster years prior as Stardust. Now the question after the first AEW signing by WWE is how will both sides react? WWE has a tendency to completely tear down something or somebody that they didn't create on their own. There was immense fear that the same would happen with Cody Rhodes. But instead, the exact opposite has happened. Now, it's only been a week, or a little over a week, but so far, so good. He has been positioned on the main show, Monday Night Raw, as one of the top guys on the show. By all indications, WWE is looking to position Cody Rhodes to challenge the number one champion in the company, the Tribal Chief Roman Reigns. So far, WWE is doing all the right things in regards to Cody Rhodes. And so far, likewise, AEW owner Tony Khan is not responding very well. He went on Twitter the week after Cody went to WWE, claiming that a lot of anti-AEW sentiment on Twitter was because of WWE bots. Now, I don't doubt that there are bots working against AEW. I don't doubt there are bots working against WWE or any other promotion. It's 2022. Automatically assume half of social media is run by bots. Period. But to completely dismiss any and all criticism of your product to bots is disingenuous and a really bad look. Tony Khan needs to hire two people right now before he looks to further expand his wrestling umbrella company, both AEW and Ring of Honor. He needs to hire a Twitter PR expert, somebody that can pull him aside, let him know that that tweet is probably not going to end very well, and you should probably not hit the tweet button. He also needs to hire some help. Someone that can help kind of take some of the load off of his plate, because right now, between doing all the promoting and booking of over 6 hours worth of AEW television a week, and now running the revitalized Ring of Honor, the man is going to drive himself insane or into an early grave. The good leaders do all the work they can and know what they're doing. The best leaders know when to delegate and hire people that are at least comparable to themselves in that department. Tony Khan right now needs to delegate some of that responsibility. Meanwhile, short of maybe bringing Jericho back for a potential Hall of Fame run or signing a big guy like Brian Cage, I don't suspect the floodgates are going to open anytime soon just yet to sign a plethora of former AEW wrestlers. At least not right now. But don't automatically assume it's not going to happen. Remember, Vince McMahon has money too. Lots of it. And every wrestler that is coming up right now grew up dreaming of going to WWE. Remember, the thing about competition is that it brings out the best in people. And in all reality, that's all any sensible wrestling fan has ever wanted out of AEW, to help bring out the best in everyone. WWE, AEW, New Japan, Impact, GCW, everybody is benefiting from there being a competitive energy in the air once again, and that will only make professional wrestling as a whole better in the long run. Before I bid you adieu, I wanted to share some news with you, with really all of you. So it's very likely that the Vertigo issue that I discussed a while back will be revisited soon, and I will need to take some time off. So at the end of April, I will be releasing a best of compilation of some highlights from some of my favorite interview episodes of the podcast. I'm also efforting a couple new interviews, hopefully coming soon, but because of legal reasons, I cannot say more than that. The best of episode will likely drop towards the end of April 2022 or early May, and will feature highlights from my interviews with James Scott of the Across the Pond podcast, Ben Phipps of Blue Topaz Digital, Cruise Control of the I Want to Know What Love Is podcast, and McLean Lindquist of the Telltale Heart film. You're not going to want to miss this. I hope to see everybody with a brand new episode sometime in the middle of May. If not, I'll keep everybody in the loop. Follow me on Twitter at the _closing_tag for further updates. In the meantime, that will do it for this episode of the podcast. I want to thank everybody that has helped make the podcast as enjoyable as it has been. We are on all the major platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and more. And video episodes of the podcast are up on the Facebook page as well as on YouTube. Links can be found in the description, but they can also be found on theclosingtag.com. One other link that you'll find in the description of this podcast is a donation link. If you'd be so kind as to donate what you can, if you can, I'd greatly appreciate it. I know times are tough right now with gas prices and rent and everything just being astronomically insanely high right now. So I don't really expect a great deal. Again, I do this for fun, but your donations are greatly appreciated. Again, thank you so much for watching and for listening, and remember to always include your closing tags.
This has been a Mad Owl presentation.